flag lowering first.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Portland City Council. We're very glad that you're here. Before we gavel in us into formal session, we have a couple of special presentations and acknowledgments. And for the first one, I'd like to recognize Commissioner Dan Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. On Monday, July 2nd, the City of Portland flag will be lowered to honor Mahanari Noah, who died June 14th. The Oregon State Medical Examiner's Office ruled that his death was caused by battered child syndrome or abuse and neglect sustained over a period of time. Mahanari was just 5 years old. He liked to sing and dance and was a very happy, loving little boy, especially with his younger cousins. Because of child abuse, Mahanari will have no tomorrows. I am appalled that this happened in his house, a place where every child should feel safe. I want to remind everyone that if you witness abuse or neglect, call 911 or the toll-free child abuse hotline at 1-800-509-5439. Our thoughts are with Mahanari and his family, friends, and loved ones during this difficult time. This is the ninth time that the city flag will be lowered since April of 2009 to honor our children who die due to homicidal violence. I would ask that we have a moment of silence in honor of Mahanari. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Michael here? Michael Kaplan, come on up, if you would. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Welcome. Could you please introduce yourself and talk a little bit about why you're here, and then I have the great honor of reading a proclamation.
Good morning. My name is Michael Kaplan. I work as Executive Director of Cascade AIDS Project. I want to thank Mayor Adams and the commissioners for having me today. I was asked to speak for just a few minutes on the National HIV Testing Day, which is today, the 18th annual. I must say, I haven't seen chambers so full and thought, wow, there's excitement for National Testing Day, but I realize there's other issues at hand. Today is the 18th annual National Testing Day, and today in the U.S., 1.2 million Americans are living with HIV. 20% of them, a quarter million Americans, don't even know they're HIV infected. And that quarter million account for the vast majority of new infections. When I tested HIV positive 20 years ago, the options on treatment were much less. Today, there are a lot of options, and we have state programs that help with treatment. Even more importantly, last year, the NIH found that access to early treatment for an HIV positive person can reduce the likelihood of them infecting their sexual partners by 96%. Meaning early treatment is more effective than even vaccines we've hoped for. The key to all of this is about testing. If we could get every American to know their HIV status and to get onto early treatment when warranted, we could stop the epidemic tomorrow in the U.S. And so on the 18th annual National HIV Testing Day, I would urge people to think about the CDC recommendations that ask that anyone between the ages of 13 and 64 get regularly screened for HIV. And I appreciate the City Council taking the time to recognize this day.
Thank you, sir. And thank you for just your amazing, enthusiastic, and very effective leadership on this issue and your work with Cascade AIDS Project.
Thank you.
So I'm very pleased to read the following proclamation. Whereas the medical condition known as HIV and AIDS was first detected in our country over 30 years ago, and HIV-AIDS epidemic is now entering its fourth decade. And whereas in 1995, the National Association of People with AIDS launched the National HIV Testing Day campaign in response to the growing number of HIV infections in communities of color, the LGBTQ communities, and other heavily impacted groups, and organizations and organizes annual national HIV testing days in partnership with federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and other national and local entities across the country. And whereas over 20% of people living with HIV in the United States are not even aware that they have the disease, which has serious health consequences and facilitates the spread of new infections. And whereas all Americans need to be tested for HIV to safeguard their own health and to help bring the epidemic under control. And whereas this unique and effective program created by people living with HIV and AIDS sends the message that prevention and control of HIV is a community as well as an individual imperative. Now, therefore, I, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim June 27, 2012 to be HIV testing day in Portland and encourage all residents to take the test and take control. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Carla. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. How are you?
Good. They say it's going to get to be 75 degrees today.
Okay.
Do you believe them?
Sure.
Always the optimist. Can you please call the roll?
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Adams.
Here. Can you please read the first communication tonight?
There was that Lee thing, the port building.
Nope. Did you call the roll?
Yes.
You were here.
Oh, I was. Good. I guess I also have an announcement that the Portland Building has just received the LEED Gold certification. And that is a big deal because it's an existing building. And I want to thank the Bureau of Enterprise Services. Am I introducing somebody? Bob, where are you? Why don't you come forward here and tell us a little bit about what this means. And congratulations.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. LEED for existing buildings, the operations and maintenance, is a comprehensive certification process that looks at the entire way a building is maintained and operated. It serves as a guide and a roadmap to help OMF facilities integrate best management practices into its operations. Not only has LEED allowed us to focus specifically on resource conservation within the Portland building, it has also helped facilities establish a baseline for the service contracts we manage. We have incorporated green cleaning language into janitorial contracts, started providing integrated pest management for our buildings, and have looked at how we can best manage graffiti removal in a sustainable way across all of our facilities. LEED for existing buildings not only creates a high-performance building, it also supports the tenants in the building by implementing best management practices to support good indoor environmental quality, provides recycling waste management opportunities, and educates tenants on sustainable building practices. Mostly, LEED has given us the roadmap to change the culture of how we maintain and manage buildings. This effort has allowed us to create new tools for operating standards that we will be able to be modeled in most of our city office buildings and will be used successfully to implement Council's green building policy. Some of our measurable results from 2011 include 51% of our waste being diverted from landfills by recycling and composting, Energy Star rating certification of 83, a domestic water use reduction of 132,000 gallons, reduced our energy use by 6%, and over 60% of our Portland building tenants use alternative means of transportation. This effort was led by our interim operations maintenance manager, Wendy Gibson, and involved the dedicated participation of the entire facility services staff, as well as the cooperation and work of every bureau within the Portland building. We thank everyone for their hard work and dedication in making Portland a leader in our sustainable future, and we thank the entire council for your support in this effort.
Good job.
Congratulations. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. Can you please read the first communications item number 748?
Request of John Otani to address council regarding the lack of enforcement of jaywalking law.
Hi, welcome.
Thank
You just need to give us your first and last name.
John O'Tony.
And you'll have 3 minutes, and that clock on that big piece of wood will help you count down your time.
I'm going to read you a letter that I wrote to you folks. I think you all have a copy of it. And basically it tells you, the city of Portland has an ordinance for jaywalking. The fine calls for $94 if you get a ticket. I have never seen a ticket issued in this on this issue at all. The following are some incidents I observed personally. On Monday, June 11th, I saw a middle-aged lady walk across 117th and Stark against the light, and there was an ambulance coming down the road with siren blaring. She would not yield, and the ambulance had to stop. Okay. At Cedar Sovereign Boulevard, I observed a young man cross four lanes of traffic, and this happened at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And on June 19th, I observed 14 persons, including two deputy sheriffs of Multnomah County, cross 5th and Jefferson, and they would have generated $1,316. This happened at 11 o'clock in the morning. If you take that over an 8-hour period, it would generate $10,258. And a 10-day period, it would generate, 30-day period, I'm sorry, would generate $31,584. Enforcement of this ordinance would increase the city's coffers and add to the safety of people in the city of Portland. I do not understand why this is not enforced. That's basically it, and I feel as I see it all the time, any street downtown, in the middle of the day, morning, afternoon, evening, doesn't matter. I've seen people cross against the light in front of a bus or a MAX train, and you know what the consequences are. If somebody gets hit and they don't have insurance, it's up to the city of Portland to pay for it, or the taxpayers pay for it, through the emergency. So who gets hurt in the long end? We do. We need to put an end to this kind of, we need enforcement of this ordinance. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. It's a very important reminder that you've given us, and Chad Stover is walking around in the back from my office, and if you can get your contact information, we can get you some more information as well.
Right.
And again, not only are your words very wise, but in terms of the basic functioning of the community, but they also keep people alive. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Can you please read the communication item number 749?
Request of Peter Garcia to address council regarding parks and recreation, no fishing law. Mr. Garcia called. He's not able to make it.
Okay.
Now, would you just
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Garcia was going to come here this morning and raise a concern about fishing in Portland. And I just wanted to give my colleagues a quick update because there's been some interest in this. I've asked my bureau to come forward with clear rules about where you can and cannot fish. Right now, anybody in the city of Portland can fish on the riverbank below ordinary high water mark. However, most of our docks, the docks that we own and operate, were built and maintained under grants from the Oregon Marine Board. The covenants in those grants prohibit us from allowing fishing for safety and health reasons on those docks. The consequence of us being in breach of those covenants is we'd have to reimburse the State Marine Board for the money that they have given to the city to rehabilitate those docks. There is one dock that is currently legally available for fishing, and that's the Cathedral Park dock. And shortly, we'll have a comprehensive set of guidelines to let people know exactly where they can and cannot fish. So thank you, Mayor.
That's great. Thank you. Can you please read communications item number 750?
750, request of Crystal Ilinski to address council regarding Port of Portland.
Crystal Ilinski. Crystal Alinsky. Are you Crystal Alinsky? I need you to take your seat, and you can pass those out afterwards if you would. We have a long agenda today.
Currently, it's prohibited. You're not allowed to.
That's a fishing place.
I have 3 minutes, yes?
Yeah, and that clock right there will help you count it down.
Commissioners, I have the distinct privilege of being able to stop by here every Wednesday now. I used to come on a regular basis when I lived downtown a few years ago. I was homeless and quite familiar with all of the services in town. And originally on the what I wrote on the communication sheet was that I did have issues to talk about the our environs in the Port of Portland area related to commerce. But if I saw Cameron Witten outside on his hunger strike when I came back into town, I would speak on that. And I'm very sad to say that he's still there. This summer I'm taking care of foster children, continuing my education in IEPs, and starting the CASA court-appointed special advocate. This is not working right. So I see a lot, and it's interesting that we have to stop and think about what happens to youth when they are abused. And this is my central focus. And most of my 40 years, I've been an educator, an advocate, and a caregiver for youth. And Cameron Witten is one of our most esteemed, positive youth that we have, that he represents what a lot of us are thinking but don't say. And I am appalled. Last week I came to speak to each of you in your offices as I was heading out towards the Tillamook bus, and I wrote in my speech actually on the Tillamook bus, appalled. So it's funny, Commissioner Saltzman, that you feel the same. I agree. It's appalling what happens with child abuse. But when I found out in each of your offices that not one of you had set up a meeting with Cameron, discussed the terms, I know that Commissioner Fritz went outside and talked to him, but it was 19 days at that point, and I left a message with each of you that this was urgent. On the 20th day is when the real health effects start to set in. Now, your staff also didn't know about the conditions that he and other occupiers have set about the situation with homelessness and youth in the city. And I know someone who just bought out a business from their friend that left the country just down the street. And we were arguing over the economy, and I'm also unemployed now, former school teacher. I understand that I can look back and say, okay, this is the economy, but when we don't put our priority with our youth and find places for them to live and opportunities for them, not just volunteerism, but these are people. Occupy had everything going for it, and we would allow this to happen.
I need you to wrap up. Your time is over.
I would also like to have a moment of silence for child abuse.
Ma'am, your time is over, so we have to move on. Thank you. Sue, that is now consider the consent agenda. I understand item 764 was pulled at the request of TriMet. Anything else?
758.
758. Okay. All right. Can you, unless there are other items to be pulled, can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved.
Mayor Adams, I understand that 758 is pulled back to your office.
What's that? Great. Yes. It's pulled, and I'll send it back to our office.
Shall I read the title for 758? Please. Authorized Memorandum of Understanding with 211 Info and Multnomah County to define working relationship in preparing for and responding to emergencies.
Unless there are objections, 758 is referred back to the Office of the Mayor. So done. All right. Please call the vote on the consent agenda.
We did.
Oh, sorry. Can you please read the title for time certain, item number 751?
Amend code to prohibit the use of skateboards or other similar devices in the neighborhoods surrounding Washington Park.
Commissioner Randy Leonard.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. I'd like to bring forward a panel, Stu Oishi from my office, Eric Nagel from Arlington Heights, and Joe Angel from Arlington Heights. So Mayor Adams and council members, normally I would introduce the ordinance, kind of give some background and some overview. I'm going to do that a little differently today. I'm going to ask the panel to first make its presentation, and before we make we take public testimony, I'll make remarks then. Stu?
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners and mayor. On this day, exactly 11 and a half years ago, City Council lifted a ban on skateboarding in Portland. The driving mechanism behind this original ordinance was to recognize alternate forms of transportation for commuters. 11 and a half years ago, inline skates, scooters, and skateboards were recognized as alternate forms of transportation. This decision back then benefited a small group of commuters who skated and scooted Portland, but without the city laying down some regulations. And so as a reminder what those regulations are on the current code, they are basically no skating on any sidewalks within the area bounded by Southwest Jefferson, NATO Parkway, Northwest Hoyt, and 13th Avenue, plus the middle and bisection sidewalks in the park blocks. No skating on the skate or side, excuse me, no skating on the street and sidewalks on Southwest 5th or 6th Avenues between Southwest Lincoln and Burnside. And lastly, no skating on the street and sidewalk Northwest 5th Avenue or 6th Avenue between Burnside and Union Station. So you can see when City Council back then, they had public safety concerns with allowing skaters to mix with traffic. And that's why we're here today. We're echoing those concerns. We are here to amend the city code on roller skates and skateboards to address traffic safety concerns that the Arlington Heights neighbors will share with us this morning. The city code 16.70410 exclusively outlines the roller skate and skateboarding regulations for the city. The city of Portland is no doubt a gem for skateboard enthusiasts. We have indoor, outdoor parks, the ability to skate the streets to get through town. But over the past 11 years, you can see inline skates has faded out, and this sport of longboarding has risen. We are now looking and seeming to take the commuter and transport the transportation intent of the original ordinance language and stretching it to include the sport of longboarding through neighborhood streets. The residents of Arlington neighborhood, the residents of the Arlington Heights neighborhood are here today to express their concerns with the longboarders wildly surfing through their windy streets. Many boarders take their rides through the neighborhood beyond the safety limits. Boarders are seen taking unnecessary risks on the road as they drift onto oncoming traffic, driving into turns, blowing through stop signs, and passing cars. We only have one skateboarding traffic accident to appear on the state and local traffic accidents report for the Arlington Heights neighborhood. There are many skateboarding incidences that don't make this traffic report. So you can see that we are pretty fortunate to have that. The more popular longboarding becomes, boarders will have the urge to challenge themselves to the popular surf spots in the hills. The risks are looking to outweigh the benefits for having free skate through the Arlington Heights neighborhood. The residents of Arlington Heights neighborhood are looking to protect the safety for their residents as well as the life of a risky boarder that's just one hairpin turn away. This is our chance to steer the roller skate skateboarding code back to its commuting and the commuting efforts council saw 11 years ago. So basically, this code amendment will basically do two things to the existing code. We will prohibit skateboarding on selected neighborhood streets through the neighbor, we are prohibiting skateboarding on selected Arlington Heights neighborhood streets. We are increasing the fines for not following the skateboard code from $25 to $115. And as for the commuting efforts, Southwest Kingston Avenue remains an open skateboard passage through Washington Park and Arlington Heights. And so that's basically the background of where we were and where we are today. And I have Joe Angel here from Arlington Heights to my right that will carry on.
Mayor, Council, I'm a board member of the Arlington Heights Neighborhood Association. Our neighborhood association, along with the Sylvan Neighborhood Association, is here to explain to you and answer any questions about a real problem in our neighborhood on neighborhood streets, and it affects neighborhood livability. We have, over the last couple of years, tried to solve this problem, and we find ourselves here today because there has been no solution. We have people who are ignoring traffic laws, stop signs, interacting head-on with motor vehicles. I would like you to think of the analogy of a skier coming down Mount Hood in a ski race. In a ski race, you have a course that's cordoned off so people can't walk across it. You don't have snow cats coming up the down pathway. In Arlington Heights, we have all that. We have people traveling at very high speeds on longboards, going across traffic lanes, going through stop signs, hitting vehicles, and hitting pedestrians. This has become quite a problem at all times of the day because a lot of skaters use MAX. They go to the zoo station. They skate down to the Multnomah Athletic Club and get back on and do it again. It's a very serious problem, and we're afraid that somebody's going to be killed. Eric Nagel is another board member of the association, and he has a presentation and a film for you to see exactly in a graphic way what is going on. Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor Adams and members of the council. Thank you for hearing us today. The reason we're here today is that in Arlington Heights, we are really, really afraid that someone is going to die on our streets. A skater, a pedestrian. The situation in the last several years has gotten completely out of control. We're looking at the possibility of a real tragedy on our streets, and we're begging you to help us prevent such a tragedy. Could I get the PowerPoint up? Thank you. Let me make one thing clear, if I can. We're not talking about green transportation versus cars here. Many of us in the neighborhood walk to work, bike to work, take the bus to work, and we're quite accustomed to our streets being used as a commuter route by bicycles. It's Fairview is a very popular bicycling route. That's part of the fabric of our neighborhood, and we're delighted to host bicycle traffic. What's happened in the last several years is that we've had a new and different kind of use of the streets, a high-speed thrill sport that's not being used for transportation. The skateboarders are often driving to our neighborhood and using the MAX as a ski lift, essentially, and running stop signs, cutting in front of cars, in some cases actually running into pedestrians. It's a completely different kind of use than I think this council anticipated when it first enacted the skateboard ordinance. This is the kind of use that we don't think the city council ever expected to see when it enacted that ordinance. This is a quote from a local skateboarding site that describes the run through our neighborhood. One of the best inner city runs in the city, very fast straightaways, 40 plus miles per hour on a skateboard, if you can imagine that. on streets where the speed limit is 25 miles an hour. And this is a video that shows some typical behavior in the neighborhood. Much of the skating occurs at night. The skaters will get off the MAX at the Washington Park Station, come down. Can we get this sound up? This is Fairview Boulevard near the Arboretum. The skaters have frequently staged races in our neighborhood. That's the corner of Fairview and Kingston. They're running the stop sign there. Okay, well, unfortunately, we don't have the sound here, but this is a skater explaining why Arlington Heights is such a great place to skate, because unlike any other neighborhood in the city, we have a MAX station at the bottom of the hill and another one at the top of the hill. So you can do your runs again and again and again. That's why we have more skate traffic than any other neighborhood in the city. Here we've got skaters again running the stop signs at Fairview and Kingston. And this kind of skating that you're seeing here is quite common. Most of us who live in the neighborhood have seen it, and it's not at all unusual to be coming around a corner if you're driving a car and have a skater in your lane oncoming. We've had a number of collisions between skaters and cars that I'll talk about a little bit later. And the skating goes down through Washington Park by the reservoirs. And, of course, a lot of the traffic that comes up the street is tourist traffic, people visiting the Rose Garden, people who really have, because they're from out of town, they have no idea that they should be looking out for skaters who might suddenly appear in their windshield. This is a one-way street here, and we have the skater actually pulling up to a driver and doing what's called skitching, which is grabbing a car and hitching a ride on it to get a boost. You'll see this car actually has to pull over and stop in order to avoid hitting the skater.
Just to clarify, this is a video that you found online. It's not one that your
right. This
neighborhood
is,
made.
This is a truly stunning shot here. The skater almost runs into a car head-on. This is a compilation of videos that skaters posted on YouTube, and I downloaded them and patched them together. Here we have a skater skating right between an oncoming TriMet bus and a car. Quite common to see skaters coming down the hill prone like this, where they have much less control. Now, here's what one local skater has said about skating in the neighborhood, Billy Bones Miners. He's noticed a drastic increase in the number of skaters using our hill on Fairview, and he's alarmed by the recklessness that some of the skaters have exhibited. This is a comment that he posted on the neighborhood website. Here's another comment by a skater posted on Bike Portland. He says, these routes through our neighborhood aren't for the faint of heart. I feel for the neighborhood as I've seen many young riders speeding beyond their capability. And I think that's a critical issue here. There are some very skilled elite athletes among these longboarders. I mean, their daring and skill is truly impressive. And then there are the younger wannabes who are trying to imitate the older guys. And those are the ones who I think are at greatest risk. Now, Arlington Heights is a residential neighborhood, but we have a lot more traffic than just the residents of the neighborhood. Because we're next to Washington Park, which gets 2 million visitors a year, we have a huge amount of visitor traffic coming into the neighborhood, which produces on a regular basis through the summer. This is a shot on Fairview Boulevard. Quite heavy traffic, and it's not at all uncommon to see skaters weaving their way through traffic like this. There are two bus lines that run down Fairview, and it's not at all unusual to see skaters skating right in front of TriMet buses. Now, this is not just a matter of thrills. This type of activity can really hurt somebody. There are 23,000 traumatic brain injuries among skaters every year in this country. 40 skaters died last year on U.S. streets last year. 7 skaters since 2009 have died on Oregon streets. And it's not just skaters who are at risk. Last year in California, a 17-year-old who ran a stop sign killed an 83-year-old woman, a pedestrian. Now, just a few of the accidents that have occurred recently in Arlington Heights will illustrate what we're talking about. The first day of this month, June 12, 2012, a skater in the wrong lane coming down Titchener, coming around the corner, slammed head-on into a moving car. He rolled over the hood. An ambulance responded. A police officer responded. Fortunately, the skater was not seriously injured. The car was damaged. The skater was not cited for any violation by police. Last month, a 14-year-old skater from Salem ran the stop sign at Fairview in Kingston and smashed his head right through the rear window of a parked car. He was taken away by an ambulance to OHSU. I don't know what his injuries were. He was walking and talking, apparently, when neighbors helped pick him up off the street. Earlier this year, a skater coming down the sidewalk on Rutland in Arlington Heights ran down a 3-year-old boy. November of last year, a skater in the wrong lane on Fairview slammed head-on into a moving car, injuring his foot so badly he had a compound fracture. He's had multiple surgeries since then, and he ended up making a claim against the driver for his medical bills, even though he was clearly at fault. June of last year, a skater lost control on Fairview, injured his foot, wasn't able to walk, and a neighborhood resident drove him to the emergency room. Again, October of 2010, another skater did the same thing as we saw last month, ran the stop sign at Fairview in Kingston, slammed his head through the rear window of a parked car, damaging it to the tune of $3,200. Now, other cities have dealt with this same problem. This is not unique to Portland. In Malibu, California, the city council voted to ban skateboarding on certain steep streets. This was prompted after a teenage skater suffered a head injury, and the city's insurer asked the city what it was going to do about limiting its liability in situations like this. Laguna Beach, California, did the same thing last year, banned skateboarding on 8 streets. Newport, Oregon, did something similar last year, selected certain high-risk streets where there was too much conflict with traffic and banned skateboarding on those streets. Portland, Maine, took a structural approach and installed cobblestones on the problem street. Now, we have tried in the neighborhood to work with the city to deal with this problem. Last year, we attempted to get a meeting with Tom Miller, who is director of Portland Bureau of Transportation and who is the city's, you might say, the chief skateboarder of Portland. He's a leader in the skate community. He was head of Portlanders for Public Skate Parks. He led a truly successful effort to get skate parks built in the city. He understands the skating community, and if there was anybody who could help us work through this problem, we thought it was Tom Miller. When we first approached him through his staff, his response was, no, this is a law enforcement problem. It's not a PBOT problem. And we pressed further. We said, actually, PBOT is responsible for dealing with traffic safety issues. Can you please meet with us? He eventually agreed to meet with us. We rescheduled our neighborhood meetings twice to accommodate his schedule, And then on the day he was supposed to show up at our neighborhood meeting, we got a message saying that he had an undescribed emergency and couldn't make it, and we have never been able to meet with him since. Now, the skate park effort, the city's skate park plan, which calls for creation of 19 skate parks, is a model for neighborhood involvement. That's the way a city should work. The Parks and Rec work with neighborhoods around the city, coming up with siting criteria to decide where is a good, safe place to have a skate park that doesn't have undue impacts on the neighborhood. In our case, in Arlington Heights, our entire neighborhood has become a skate park with no involvement by the neighborhood. It's become a de facto skate park. So we were looking for a little of the same kind of neighborhood involvement that we saw with the city's skate park plan. So we did manage to get a meeting with police and other PBOT staff, though. We ended up having a total of 9 meetings that included skaters over a period of starting in July of last year. We were grateful that skaters came to the meetings. There were 2 in particular, J.P. Rowan, who manages a local skate shop, and Billy Bones Miners, who is a local skating champion. They made it clear to us, though, when we first sat down with them, that they couldn't claim to represent the skateboarding community. They were longboarders. They couldn't speak for what they called street skaters. There are other kinds of skaters besides longboarders that are part of the problem in the neighborhood. So what we really needed was a broader representation of the skating community. We needed somebody like, for example, Tom Miller, who really could speak for the spectrum of skaters. He never came to a meeting. Owner of another skate shop was invited to attend, and he declined to attend. We saw little effort over the past year for the skaters to really work on educating their peers. The ones that we met with, we asked them if they would consider at least setting up camp at the top of the run on Fairview and having one-on-one contacts with other skaters, and they said no, they won't listen to us. And despite the fact that starting last July, police told us there would be stepped-up enforcement, traffic enforcement in the neighborhood, we never saw any of that. As best as I've been able to determine, not a single citation has been issued to a skater in our neighborhood over the past year. And then finally, and this was really what ended it for us, even while we were meeting with JP and Billy and trying to talk about getting skaters to skate more responsibly, we discovered that they were continuing to organize illegal races. JP was organizing them in Washington Park without getting permits from Parks and Rec, even though Parks and Rec had specifically told him he couldn't run races without a permit. And then finally, in February of this year, there was a skate race announced on the Zubom website, 10 p.m. on a Sunday night, and Billy Bones was among the people who was promoting that race. This was a kick in the stomach for us, frankly. We were just shocked that we had been meeting with these guys for months, and they were still doing this. And so it was at that point, I'd say, that this collaborative effort broke down. Now, a big part of the problem, I think, that the police face is that the laws are really quite unclear. The current ordinance says that skaters are subject to the same traffic laws as bicycles, but what the police are telling us is that actually under the state vehicle code, a skateboard isn't a vehicle, and they can only charge skaters with pedestrian violations. You can charge a skater with jaywalking, but not, for example, with illegal passing. Now, that just doesn't make a lot of sense to us. As for races, the Bureau of Revenue, which issues permits for races on city streets, told us that quite clearly a skate race would require a permit and they would never consider issuing one in Arlington Heights. The Police Bureau, on the other hand, told us that no permit is required for races. Now, I know a police officer's job is tough enough as it is, but it's a lot tougher when the law that he or she is trying to enforce is unclear. And I think it's this city council's job to give the police clear laws that they can understand and enforce. This proposed ordinance will have a very limited scope to address a very specific problem. 99% of Portland streets will still be open to skateboards. It will have no impact whatsoever on bikes. The skate routes that are most popular with the skaters in Washington Park will remain open to skating. And the $115 fine that it calls for is actually much lower than the fines that a bicyclist would face. If you run a stop sign on a bicycle, the fine is $260. So we beg you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council, please don't wait until a tragedy occurs before you take action here. We really don't want to be in the position of saying, we told you so. We'd like to see decisive action before that happens. Thank you very much.
Commissioner Engel, does anybody have questions of the panel? Go ahead.
Yeah, and I'm going to hold my questions until I hear more information, but I want to ask Joe a couple of questions if I could. One of the concerns that that my Parks Bureau has to do with displacement. If you prohibit skateboarding in one place, where does it get displaced to? And in the PowerPoint, you noted that it doesn't impact directly authorized skateboarding that currently occurs in Washington Park. Joe, you live up there, so could you give us a sense of what are the challenges you encounter in Washington Park around skateboarding? And do you have a thought about, assuming we enforce this ban, what will be the likely impact on Madison Court and some of the other places where skateboarding occurs in the park?
Well, I think there may be an increase in use within Washington Park. Quite frankly, parts of the course that they like to use in Washington Park is flat. So they don't like it as much as coming down Fairview, because it's quite, what they're looking for is an adrenaline rush and, you know, 40 plus miles an hour on a skateboard. Now, from a policy standpoint, I think one of the things you guys on the council and the mayor have to decide is this kind of a lineal park something that should be developed within the city, maybe within a park, where there is no conflict with pedestrians and motor vehicles? I mean, I can see a course that has height to it and has speed to it that is completely, outside of crossing roadways and crossing sidewalks. And so that may be something that you would want to consider in the future with the skateboard plan, instead of having the old traditional skateboard parks have a lineal park that has some speed and height to it.
Anyway, that's a great idea. And the analogy that I would offer you is we've been working with off-road cyclists in areas like Forest Park, and they've asked us to designate places along fire lanes. So currently Pier, Benedict, Gabriel, Holly Farm, and Glen Haven have built skateboard parks. But you're suggesting a dedicated place somewhere where this can be done safely.
Well, I'm wanting you to think outside the box and think of a lineal park. I mean, some of these guys are very talented athletes, and having that kind of a park within the city would be quite an attraction regionally.
And I also, thank you, Joe. And I have a question for Stu. In the handout that we got, there's a copy of the original ordinance, which was passed in
December 27,
2000. Yeah. And sub K says that the council directs the Bureau of Transportation to meet with Police Bureau Safety Division to recommend and designate preferred skating routes in the downtown core area as well as throughout the rest of the city and report back to council. Do you know whether that was ever done?
From working with the city attorney's office on this, I don't think it ever happened. That's why he wanted to strike it.
Hold on a second. I was here then. And I played a role in helping to come up with the idea of preferred skating routes. And there are signs downtown. I admit they're not obeyed very much, but you can find signs within a block of this office that say these are skate routes.
I'm not aware of that.
Yeah.
Since we're not voting on this today, I guess it's coming back in 2 weeks because we don't have council next week. If I could, either from PBOT, police, or Stu, if you have information, I'd like to know more about what are the preferred skating routes if they currently exist. And the other question, and it's a question I asked Randy before today's hearing, and I just want to put this question on the record. This proposal addresses a specific problem in Arlington Heights and that has been documented. I suspect if we adopt this, we'll be hearing from our friends in Mount Tabor and some other places where there's also a fair amount of skateboarding and similar concerns. What's the process that you envision we would go through in the future if another neighborhood comes to us using this framework?
So let me jump in there and segue to the remarks I was going to make at the beginning that I wanted to save till after this was over. First of all, there is a distinction between Mount Tabor, Mount Scott, where I live, and this neighborhood. There is no MAX line. There is no easy public transportation to get to the tops of those hills to come down. What makes this neighborhood unique and particularly attractive is what you heard Eric describe and demonstrate is a perfect circuitous route by which folks will get on MAX, ride to the zoo, platform, go down and have an easy access to get back on MAX and go around and around. So that's fairly unique, and I will tell you that I have been working on this for some time now and have gotten no other feedback from neighborhoods that have analogous problems to this one. But having said that, let me thank Stu and Joe for their presentation. I'd like to ask Eric if you would stay a minute. And I'd like to ask Commander Bob Day and Billy Miner to come forward, if you will. And while they're coming forward, I want to make an observation about Eric and his involvement. Each of us here is familiar with, and if not grows accustomed to, becomes somewhat immune to personal attacks. I mean, it's part of our job. It happens on a daily basis, some of us more than others, probably. Mr. Nagel's not used to it. I have read some of the things written to him on email and some of the things posted on boards. One of which was posted by a person who said, I'm not living in the United States, so I can say this. Let's find out where he lives and take care of him. And this debate should be better than that. This discussion should be better than that. And Mr. Nagel is a neighborhood resident who has articulated what I believe to be a legitimate concern. I've been on the city council now for 10 years. I was in the Oregon legislature for almost 10 years before that. I've been in public service for 35 years. I know the difference between a serious problem and a not serious problem. I'm not easily hooked into other people's problems without first doing my own vetting and determining, is this in fact an issue? And the fact that I'm here with an ordinance demonstrates for me, not because it is for Mr. Nagel or Mr. Angel or anybody else, but demonstrates for me, this is a serious issue. So if there's any criticism that should be leveled at anybody for bringing this ordinance, it's me. Not Mr. Nagel. I get, as each of us do, dozens of requests to bring similar kinds of ordinances forward on a variety of subjects every week. And this is one that I've brought forward of probably thousands of requests that I've had. So please lay off Mr. Nagel. And say whatever you want to me. I'm fine with that. But having said that, I have read all the emails, as I'm sure the council has, and there have been some criticisms which I don't agree with, but most of us learn in public life that perception sometimes can be reality. And the perception is that notwithstanding what the neighborhood described as their justification for walking away from the negotiations, that is, they were in good faith sitting down trying to find a reasonable a compromise with the skating community. They believed that because the skating community was organizing illegal skates, that violated kind of a good faith. Now, you can agree with that, or you may have a side to that or not, but that's what they believed, and others had their own reactions to that. The police bureau has weighed in publicly and said they thought that the neighborhood walked away too soon. I don't agree with that. They've also said that they thought they did an end run in the process in contacting me. I definitely don't agree with that. Each of us here does not run for the city council and say, look, if you vote for me, you can talk with me anytime you want, but just get okay from the police bureau first. That we're elected to be here to answer any question from anybody at any time via any medium, whether it's telephone, email, or making an appointment. Mr. Nagel did exactly what I would tell any neighborhood resident they should do, and I'm sure each of us in our own way has communicated that to our constituents here in Portland. But typically we have first reading today. We take testimony as we've done, and then next week we would vote. I've been discussing in the last couple of days with Mr. Miner and representatives of the Police Bureau and Mr. Nagel, the possibility of us postponing the second reading, not until next week or even 2 weeks from now, but until September 5th. And September 5th at 9:30 a.m., which is a Wednesday morning. And the reason that I'm willing to do that is to allow the process to pick up where it left off when the neighborhood left, and discuss with Billy and others from the skating community, the police bureau. I would urge the council, especially Commissioner Fish, to have representatives at these meetings to address the legitimate concerns you raise. Any other council member that would like to participate, I would urge you to participate, because what I'd like to see happen on September 5th is one of two things. Either we get a report back that includes police bureau participation, Parks Bureau participation, PBOT participation, skating community participation, neighborhood participation, that is a consensus agreement, or we vote on this ordinance.
And Randy, let me applaud that approach, by the way. And I know you haven't vetted it with us, but I think it is the right approach. And, you know, at Parks, Brian Aptekar and some other folks have actually been in discussions with the skating community, particularly over an event that we're planning in the park, where we're trying to get some agreement on guidelines, permitting, and the like. So you have the full commitment of Parks that they will be at the table trying to get to a win here for all.
Thank you. That's particularly meaningful, because I think Parks is a key player in helping resolve some of these issues. I want to make sure I would also request, I'm not the commissioner in charge, but I'm good friends with the commissioner in charge of the police bureau, and I would request that the police bureau do something that the Commander Day and I discussed yesterday, and do a couple missions between now and September 5th. If there is a misunderstanding about whether or not traffic laws apply, what we've been advised by the city attorney is this ordinance, although the Supreme Court has said skateboarding in and of itself, it does not fall under the vehicle code, our code says that skateboarding should be treated the same as any other vehicle. So under our code, we can cite people for blowing stop signs, reckless driving, and whatnot. And I would just request between now and then you do a couple of missions. And the reason I request that is having been the beneficiary of one of those missions in my own neighborhood, it certainly slowed my speed down to 25 miles an hour in a residential neighborhood. And I think it would have the same impact if a few of the skaters recognize. And I think, you know, in the discussions I had with Billy yesterday, I appreciate it very much. He himself has said, you know, there is responsible skating and then there's irresponsible skating. And those that are irresponsible, I think it would help this process if the police bureau, you know, could identify a couple times by which you went out and said, we're really serious about this. We're going to encourage responsible skating. We're going to drop the hammer on people that are irresponsible, because we don't want you to get killed. You know, we want the neighbors to be terrorized every time they're trying to drive to or from their homes. So, Billy, I ask you to come up and respond to that. And would you like to add anything?
Thank you for the opportunity to let me speak. And I would love the chance to be able to implement the work that we've been coming up with for the last 2 months. And I think that this summer, you know, which kind of seems to be the high season for skateboard activity, would be a great chance for us to put our work in action, begin the education aspect, and also work with the police and enforcement. I mean, myself being a skater, I can help the police bureau come up with safe and effective ways to issue citations to skateboarders that break the traffic law.